ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
At the time of death is the kind of existence you'll have in your next life. And then he advised Arjuna that you should therefore think of me while you're doing your work. So it's nothing impractical, like you have to give up work, but you have to do your work, whatever it may be, but at the same time you should think of Krishna. And then he says to do that you have to practice. And practice means abhyas. You do something again and again until you become masterful at it. And then he tells some ways in which you can think of him. And they're very practical. We just read this verse. Kavim Puranam Manushashitaram Anur Aniyam Samanusmiradyaha Sarvasya Dataram Achintyarupam. What's the last line? Chintyarupam. I'll have to look it up, hold on. Sarvasya Dataram Achintyarupam Aditya Varnam Tamasaparastad. So there he's talking about ways to think of him. Kavim means as the most learned person. Like, nobody knows more than Krishna. You can put him up against anybody, anywhere, and he always knows more, because he knows everything. Kavim Puranam, and he's the oldest. So he says, think of me as the one who knows everything, and who's the oldest. Kavim Puranam, Anushashitaram, means he's the controller. He's the controller of everything. Anuraniyamsam, Anusmaradyaha, means also that he's smaller than the smallest. He can enter even into the atom. And then also, sarvasya dātāra means he's controlling everything. Achintya-rūpam, and his form is spiritual, it's inconceivable. And so he says, you know, you should always think of him as a person and remember these qualities, and that he's always beyond darkness. He's always transcendental to the material world. So that he gave some ways to think of him. Then he describes in this chapter the yogis who practice trying to put their life airs at the top of their head, especially when they're leaving the body, so that they can very deliberately go to a different planet. But then he says the devotees don't try to do that so much. They mainly focus on thinking of Krishna and performing devotional service, and they leave it up to Krishna to assist them at the time of death. And so now it comes to the last verse, which is very instructive, because in this verse he says that if you do bhakti, if you do devotional service, then you achieve the results of all the other things that people work hard for in this world. So he lists here, Vedeshu Yagyeshu Tapasu Chaiva. So these things mean studying the Vedas. Yagyeshu, performance of yagyas. Tapasu, which means doing tapasya, austerities. Daneshu, giving in charity. Punyapalam, pratishtam. All these things, the translation, a person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these, and at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. And now I'm just going to read the first paragraph, so we'll try this exercise where you reflect back after a video. Are you ready? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay. This verse is the summation of the 7th and 8th chapters, which particularly deal with Krishna consciousness and devotional service. One has to study the Vedas under the guidance of the spiritual master and undergo many austerities and penances while living in his care. A brahmachari has to live in the home of the spiritual master just like a servant, and he must beg alms from door to door and bring them to the spiritual master. He takes food only under the master's order, and if the master neglects to call the student for food that day, the student fasts. These are some of the Vedic principles for observing brahmacharya. What did you hear so far? Verse or purport?
Yeah, to be a brahmachari, he has to go through a lot of penances and go through a lot of studies and be under a spiritual master. And we can only eat under the instructions of the spiritual master. So if the spiritual master forgets, or he just has to pass. So basically, I think we just got trying to say that if we directly chant and we go directly to the Almighty, that is Krishna, so we can forego all these stages.
Wow, pretty good. That's exactly what it says in the later part of the purport. So, and that's the essence of the verse, Vedeshu Yagyeshu. So he's saying there's all these rigorous ways in which one may cultivate Vedic study, tapasya, giving and charity and so forth. But they're surpassed by the process of direct bhakti. So I'll read the next paragraph. After the student studies the Vedas under the master for some time, at least from age 5 to 20, he becomes a man of perfect character. Study of the Vedas is not meant for the recreation of armchair speculators, but for the formation of character. After this training, the brahmachari is allowed to enter into household life and marry. When he is a householder, he has to perform many sacrifices so that he may achieve further enlightenment. He must also give charity according to the country, time, and candidate, discriminating among charity and goodness, in passion and in ignorance, as described in Bhagavad Gita. Then, after retiring from household life, upon accepting the order of Vanaprastha, he undergoes severe penances, living in forests, dressing with tree bark, not shaving, etc. By carrying out the orders of Brahmacharya, householder life, Vanaprastha, and finally sannyas, one becomes elevated to the perfectional stage of life. Some are then elevated to the heavenly kingdoms, and when they become even more advanced, they are liberated in the spiritual sky, either in the impersonal Brahmajyoti or in the Vaikuntha planets or Krishna Loka. This is the path outlined by Vedic literatures. The beauty of Krishna consciousness, however, is that by one stroke, by engaging in devotional service, one can surpass all the rituals of the different orders of life. The words idam viditva indicate that one should understand the instructions given by Krishna in this chapter, in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. One should try to understand these chapters not by scholarship or mental speculation, but by hearing them in association with devotees. Chapter 7 through 12 are the essence of Bhagavad Gita. The first six and the last six chapters are like coverings for the middle six chapters, which are especially protected by the Lord. If one is fortunate enough to understand Bhagavad Gita, especially these middle six chapters in the association of devotees, then his life at once becomes glorified beyond all penances, sacrifices, charities, speculations, etc., for one can achieve all the results of these activities simply by Krishna consciousness. Anything else that you heard? Of course, you gave such a nice summary. What did you hear in that last section?
So it may sound very simple and easy that just do Krishna chanting, but I think it's very difficult to do it. And Krishna is asking us to do it throughout the day while we are doing our work, and then one doesn't have to go through so many, such a strict ritual, so much tapasya. I mean, you can just keep chanting the whole day and try to bring back your mind to Krishna whenever you are away from it.
Yeah, that's true. And as I pointed out earlier, maybe before you were here, the acharyas, the great previous teachers of bhakti, say that when Krishna says, chant constantly, don't stop, of course he means it, but the acharyas say that for those who are beginning the process of Krishna consciousness, who don't have spontaneous taste for chanting, that means you should chant at least every day. Have a regulated period in which you chant. In other words, you have some japa vow that you keep to. It's called numerical strength. It means if you start the chanting of japa, as an example, then, you know, you can say one day I'll do one round, another day I'll do 5, 15, and then 0. And that's not as effective as saying, I'll do this number, 4, 10, 6, whatever it is, and then I won't go below that. Consistency is very powerful, and it's called Sankhya-purvaka, which means that you get some numerical strength from practicing. Nice reflection, very helpful.
But then how can we do it in a normal day? As in, if I sit in my car and there are other people sitting in the car and I start chanting, I mean, unless they are all devotees, it's fine. But if they aren't, then how does one do it, even if one wants to?
Well, you mean like a carpool? You're going somewhere?
Yeah, or suppose we are sitting amongst all of us. None of us are devotees except me, and I start chanting. And they might find me a little awkward because they are not as devoted as someone.
It is awkward. And that's one of the points that the acharyas make again and again. Of course, you know, it's not expected that we would give up all kinds of association, especially if we're required through our work or something like that. So even Bhagavatam talks about this. We just read in the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam where it's talking about varnashrama. For those who are grihasthas, it means that you're going to have to mix it up with worldly-minded people. So then right in the text, Narada Muni is describing how one should associate with other people who are worldly-minded because you're obligated to do it. So some people may say this or that, and you say, yes, sir, very good, sir. But internally, you're not embracing what they're saying. Externally, it's only official. And that's why devotees they cherish the time when they have in the association of other devotees, because we are a little reticent to chant. You know, if you're with somebody else who doesn't understand, you may chant and then feel like, you know, almost you're a little bit stifled because they're thinking like, what are you doing or whatever, right? So that's why it's so important to have satsang. You have a time when you can actually do it. And most devotees find a time, they carve it out during their day, sometime where they can have private time to chant without any obstruction.
Yes.
Of course, you know, we do go out and chant in public. That's a different thing. We go out and sing, trying to make a nice presentation, singing. Do you all do that together?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Harinam.
You have Harinam? Mm-hmm. Like once a month or something?
Mm, no, it's not happened for quite some time, but earlier, like, it used to be more than once in a month.
Those are very nice too, because the devotees can all come together and you can set up like a mini festival. Those are something we've been working on in California, where we actually get a permit for the area where we're going to so that we can spread out a little bit. We'll put up a few booths and then tables. And if it's at night, we have special lighting and a sound system and stuff like that. And lots of people will come over to your book table to come and chant and stuff like that. I understand you have some good kirtaniyas here. You can do that kind of thing. But you're right, it's difficult. So you have to be inventive and carve out time. Like, I know one devotee in Japan. In Japan, they have this thing where if you catch a cold, you wear a mask. Have you seen that? I know in Delhi, they might be wearing masks. In California now, too, because the air is so thick. But there, it's just a social custom. If you've got some kind of cold or flu or whatever like that, if you go out in public, you wear a mask, because they're very social conscious not to pass things on to other people. So this one, Mataji, she has to ride on a train. So many people wear masks. So then she'll sit on the train. She has to go an hour and a half to work. So she puts a mask on, and she put earplugs in, and she'll sit there, and she'll chant. So she can hear it. The train makes a little noise. Nobody else, and they can't tell she's chanting because she has a mask on. This is what I'm talking about, being inventive. I'm not saying wear a mask necessarily. But you have to find, you know, carve out a time, a place where you can do your chanting. I had a friend who was a paramedic for 20 years. He had a horrible schedule. He worked on an ambulance, and he had to be on call 48 hours in a row. And so he figured out a way, you know, to wedge in his practice during that time. And if you're very purposeful when you do it during the time that you have, it can be effective. And then you'll be appreciative when you get more time. And you can have a block of time where you can focus on your practice or be with devotees. Just like There's a time every day that's most important. There's a time every month that's the most important. There's a time every year that's most important. And there's a time in your life that's most important. What do you think those are? The most important part of the day is?
Morning time.
Brahma Muhurta, morning time. Before it's an hour, 40 minutes before the sun rises. What about the most important time during the month?
Ekadashi.
Ekadashi. On Ekadashi Vrat, you know, it's a good excuse to go deeper into your chanting and hearing if you can. How about during the year?
Kartik.
You're good. During Kartik, it's like if there's a sale. They have department stores here, they have sales.
Yes.
What's the big one here? We have Macy's in America, I think. Bless, I haven't been shopping in a long time.
So Thanksgiving time.
Black, what's it called? The biggest
Black Friday.
No, but the store here where
the
people shop.
Here.
Yeah, what's the biggest one?
All are on sale.
Maybe like a big bazaar.
Big bazaar.
Macy's
Big it's called Big Bazaar?
Big Bazaar is like more groceries and like...
Okay.
It's like a
so
cost.
Big Bazaar says 90% off on Saturday. You don't go on Sunday. You go on Saturday. So that's like Kartik. And then time of your life, especially near the end. Of course, nobody knows when the end is, so you should always take it seriously. So be inventive, carve out time, do the best you can. And a little bit goes a long way, especially if you're focused and very sincere in your charge. I'm going to read the last paragraph. One who has a little faith in Bhagavad Gita should learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee, because in the beginning from the fourth chapter it is stated clearly that Bhagavad Gita can be understood only by devotees. No one else can perfectly understand the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. One should therefore learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee of Krishna, not from mental speculators. This is a sign of faith. When one searches for a devotee and fortunately gets a devotee's association, one actually begins to study and understand Bhagavad Gita. By advancement in the association of the devotee, one is placed in devotional service, and this service dispels all one's misgivings about Krishna or God and Krishna's activities, form, pastimes, name, and other features. After these misgivings have been perfectly cleared away, one becomes fixed in one's study. Then one relishes the study of Bhagavad Gita and attains the state of feeling always Krishna conscious. In the advanced stage, one falls completely in love with Krishna. This highest perfectional stage of life enables the devotee to be transferred to Krishna's abode in the spiritual sky, Goloka Vrindavan, where the devotee becomes eternally happy. Om Tat Sat. Any questions about anything? Any subject?
Is it okay when your mind diverts when you're chanting, when you're doing your japa? Is it okay when your mind travels somewhere else? Because what I have learned is that listen to the chant, and that's how you can bring your mind back.
Yeah.
But still, if the mind is traveling and it doesn't come back, it does and then goes back again to some thought. Does the chant still work? I mean, does the...
Well, first thing is, it's not a question of if the mind will go on a trip. It always does. As one of the things Krishna talks about in the Gita, in fact, the same question comes up from Arjuna. He says, Krishna, how am I going to control the mind? It's like the wind. It seems impossible. And he says... The mind is very strong, it's mad, as in crazy, and it's very determined. And it's fickle, it's chanchal, it moves here and there. And so Krishna gives this advice that wherever the mind goes, you should gently bring it back under the control of yourself. So it's a given that your mind will take off on you. So yes, it's okay. In fact, it's recommended. That's the process. Wherever it goes, just notice it, and then bring it back to the attention of chanting. One trick you can employ when you're chanting japa, it's a very simple thing, but it has a big effect. When you're chanting japa, be aware that you're chanting japa. That sounds almost too simple, but you try it and you'll see how profound it is, because oftentimes when I'm doing anything, I could be reading, I could be listening to somebody, my mind goes somewhere else. And then I'm not actually taking in what I'm reading or what the person's saying, because it's elsewhere. I'm not even aware of what I'm doing. And in japa, too, I can be chanting, but not actually being aware. It's kind of like this. When you say you decide to go to a gym to get in shape, so you pay the money to go to the gym. They have gyms here in Delhi, right? So you go to the gym, you pay the money to get in. You know, you buy a subscription for 3 months. So you go there, and then, you know, you see what the exercises are. One of them is lifting weights. So, you know, by lifting weights a little bit at a time, you get stronger. And then, you know, you go to the gym and you think, well, you know, the whole thing about lifting weights, it's a little bit hard. So instead of actually lifting the weight, I'll just move my arms like this. I'll just go through the motion, but I won't lift the weight. So then what happens? You know, you don't make any advancement. It's a little bit of work. So same thing with japa. I can get in the habit of sitting, chanting, but I'm not actually doing the work of being aware that I'm chanting. I'm thinking of the people I have to call back, the bills I didn't pay. I'm worried about my wardrobe. You know, whatever it can be, the mind can concoct so many things. So the time when we chant, this is the time to actually do the heavy lifting, like you're saying, and bring the mind back very determinedly to focus on the holy name. And one way to do that is just be aware that you're chanting. Like, I'm chanting now. And if you're present for the holy name, stay present, then Krishna will reciprocate with you.
Does a Krishna photograph or something will work better initially?
It's not stereotype. There are different ways that you can situate yourself so you can concentrate on your japa. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this in the Harinam Chintamani, that try different ways in order to get this focus. Like he says, sometimes you go in a closet, close the door, you know, put a chadar over your head, or sit with an advanced devotee and chant. Or yes, look at a picture of Krishna and chant. That can help also. Whatever way you can fix your mind is a good way to do it.
I experimented to do Tratak, as in just keep looking at the picture of Krishna, and then when I closed my eyes, I could at least see the frame.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, if you do it with a candlelight also, you will only see the flame when you shut your eyes. You
mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, you have to keep experimenting.
Yeah, main thing is, there's several things. For chanting, there's standard wisdom about the practicality of chanting, which you may have heard before, the three P's. Do you know about the three P's in chanting? Okay, first is posture. So if you sit up a little straighter, and even when I mention posture, everyone sits up. This always happens. And so posture it's an interesting thing because, like, if you go to a job interview, you know, they're going to think, like, who is this joker? Get him out of here. But, you know, you go to a job interview and you're going to be like, yeah, sure, of course. You know, it's obvious from your body language that you're either interested or you're not, right?
Yeah.
And similarly, when you sit up straight, when you straighten your spine, your whole nervous system takes notice and is thinking, like, wow, something important's happening now because I just sat up. If you're talking to somebody and you sit up, they're going, what? What are you going to say now? This must be heavy. So posture and then pronunciation. So if you're aware that you're enunciating the word, you're pronouncing them properly, you're saying the syllables, this will prevent also the mind wandering off because there's a body-mind connection. And when you're trying to concentrate on saying the syllables properly, one way that you can help yourself with this, which I highly recommend, is to record yourself chanting. And you may be embarrassed because you're like, that's not the Maha Mantra, it's something else. But to my mind, I'm filling in the blanks and it sounds, to me, it sounds like I'm doing the Maha Mantra, but I'm not. So listen to yourself and fix your pronunciation. It really helps. And the third one is prayer. This is the most important. I like to say it's like, when you start chanting japa, go on a search. Like you're going in one of those, you put on scuba diving equipment, you go down deep into the ocean. So go deep into your heart and look for your sincerity. Like, where is that sincerity that I really want to connect with Krishna? If you can find that when you're chanting, and really pray, Krishna, please help me. Please let me engage in your service. That's what the prayer means anyway. And you can say that and be aware that you're praying. Then your japa becomes very sublime. And then finally, keep in mind what Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Instruction. Do you have that book? This is a summary study of all the important aspects of bhakti. It's a very short book, but if you read this book, it gives you an idea of the most important tenets of bhakti. So in there he talks about chanting. And he says, when you have jaundice, which I don't recommend, so I've had it. When you get jaundice, everything turns yellow. You turn yellow, the world turns yellow, and whatever you eat, especially sweet things, tastes terrible, really terrible. One of the curatives for jaundice is sugarcane juice. So the doctor may say, drink sugarcane juice regularly. So when you drink it, it tastes terrible. But if you keep drinking it, and as the jaundice starts to subside, then you can notice sip by sip that the juice is starting to taste really good. So this is same with chanting. In the beginning, when I chant, there's a natural revulsion I have because of what Rupa Goswami says is avidya, ignorance. It gets in you, and it's like a disease, like jaundice. So it makes everything taste terrible. The chanting, which is sweet as nectar, makes it taste terrible. Did you bring your harmonium? We're chanting out here, right? So he said, go on, despite the fact that you may feel some resistance. And then gradually, as your ignorance subsides, and it can take some time, one devotee in Australia, early on, it was in like 1972, he asked Prabhupada, so Prabhupada, how long does it take to perfect this chanting? And Prabhupada hesitated about a minute, and then he goes, 40 years. 40 years. So, it's such an exalted thing, but don't expect overnight results. It's a very sustained process. Thank you. This is a Nectar of Instruction, the book I was just quoting from. It's a highly recommended book by Rupa Goswami. It's a handbook. It goes from the most simple points to the most advanced. And another thing I recommend is distribute Krishna consciousness to others. So in the car, I left my luggage in the car, but I have a bag in the car. And in that bag were a bunch of small books like this in Hindi, a few in English. And there's a bunch of about 100 lollipops that were offered to Krishna. So like on the drive down here, every time we stopped at a toll booth, person behind the toll booth got lollipops and a book. I think the driver really liked it. You know, he'd pull up a little bit. I was in the back seat, you know, get. And when I get to the airport, everyone I see is going to get a book and a lollipop. And they get really happy. You know, even those guards at the door that take half an hour to read two sentences off your, you know, boarding pass. You know, they're waiting at the door. It's like, there's two lines they have to read, and they're like half an hour. I'm like, what? You know, it's two lines. You know, I give them a lollipop and a book, and they always get a big smile, especially if they like Krishna, then they're like, go ahead. And inside, you know, whoever I meet, behind the counter, the workers, everybody, they're in there bored stiff. You know, they don't let them sit down, the workers in there, because it doesn't look good inside the workers sitting down. So they have to stand up all day. I talk to them when I distribute books in there, and they all say, you know, like, having something to break the monotony, they're so happy. And they say, we can't sit down here. So get some books, Hindi books, and when you walk around and you're, Hare Krishna, great to see you, thanks for coming.
I wanted to see you.
Thank you very much. When you go around anywhere, take with you a few books. There's so many nice introductory books you have here in India, in Hindi. And you can also take some prasadam. I use lollipops because Prabhupada gave us permission to do so in 1972 in a letter he wrote when we asked him about that. And you can offer them to Krishna, And I don't know any living entity. I haven't met one yet that doesn't like a lollipop. Even the monkeys in Vrindavan, you know, I'd throw them a lollipop. Here's in slow motion. Monkey's sitting there, throw him the lollipop, and he goes like this. They take the, I mean, they know what a lollipop is. They take the wrapper off, put it in their mouth right away. And the langur monkeys, too, those are the rhesus. They're really kind of agitated and fast. But the langur monkeys, there's one over at Divyanam's apartment that's guarding the place. You know those langurs? They guard against the rhesus, because when the rhesus monkeys see the big langur, they freak out and they go the other way, because I guess they're eternal enemies or something. So I always give that langur monkey a lollipop, because the trainer said it was okay. I can't imagine that it's really good for him. But he takes it. The langurs are more like noble, sophisticated. He takes it and he's like, thank you very much. Puts it down. Prasadam, another little hug. Pretty soon, you know, you'll be friends with everybody in the bank. You'll be like, hey, that's the person who gives me lollipop. And then, you know, when they inquire, who are you? Why are you so nice? Then you can give them a book. But if you're prepared to give, you'll always be in this heightened state of consciousness. And New Delhi, I have breaking news for you all. New Delhi was built for Sankirtan. There's otherwise, there's no real reason to live here. You all live out in the country somewhere where there's apple trees and mangoes and, you know, all kinds of things instead of in the city. But here, everyone's all together so that we have easy access to share ideas with them, especially Krishna consciousness. So take advantage of that. It changes your life. Just a normal trip to the store becomes a transcendental excursion when you go out with the idea that I'm going to give somebody a book and a lollipop, or whatever way you want to distribute it. But it'll change your life, and it'll make you more aware of your chanting, and make you more aware of Krishna wherever you go. So you can try that. And is anybody watching the time? I have to.
Yeah, it's 5:34.
I have to go at some point, don't I?
6:15, whatever you say. You
can. I leave at 6?
Yeah, okay. Between 6 and 6:15.
I have another. I have a devotee I have to visit. He had a stroke last year, and so he's kind of been shut in a little bit, a lot. And I want to go and visit him before I take my flight, because he needs association. It's hard being alone and not being mobile, you know. So I'll go visit him. Yeah, let's have a little kirtan. You had a
yeah. So you mentioned Brahmamurta is a good time to chant. And
yeah.
Before we sleep, it's a good. Is it a good thing to? I mean, I know it's a good thing every minute.
Right.
But you know.
Well, one thing is, you know, before you sleep, if you can do some Krishna conscious activity, then it helps you to dream in Krishna consciousness. Also, I also recommend, unless you're inveterately neat anyway, that clean up your space before you take rest. It's sattvagun to keep a place for everything and everything is place. So what I try to do wherever I am is I make sure everything's in really good order right before I take rest. Because first thing, and also whatever scriptures I'm going to read in the morning, I'll put out in the order that I'm going to read them in. Because you're not the same person in the morning that you were at night. And if you take trouble to lay it all out at night before you wake up in the morning, then you'll have some direction in the morning. When you first wake up, then you, oh, right, here's a paper trail. This is what I'm supposed to do. Instead of your mind just taking off and going doing some nonsense, you know, it's better to set it up. Clean the house, make it neat, and put everything in order. Then you wake up. And if you do something Krishna conscious before you take rest, that's all the better too. Okay, now our Kirtaniya is going to lead us in a bhajan. You have a kartalist? Oh, you are?
Yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's a that was a very beautiful kirtan, and I could see that the youth group here is very expert and advanced. So it's very advantageous to have the youth together with everybody else spreading Krishna consciousness. And kids grow up fast, become leaders of the Sankirtan movement very quickly. So ours is that we have very strong Sangha here and a lot of very advanced devotees. So just invest your time as much as possible in hearing and chanting, doing really good sadhana. Don't worry about what condition you're in now. If you apply yourself to your to the process of Krishna consciousness steadily over the different eras and eras in your life, you'll improve by Krishna's grace. And also work together as much as possible to try to distribute Krishna consciousness to others, because this is very high sadhana. And the combination of the two has a synergistic effect. As much as dal is a good food and rice is a good food, but when you put them together, you get 42% more nutrition, according to Jamuna's cookbook. And in a similar way, if you hear and chant together and you also go out together to distribute books, prasadam, and the holy names to the people of New Delhi, then you'll be inspired to hear and chant more. And as you hear and chant, you'll want to distribute it more. And this is a winning combination. And I don't think you have a better place on earth than New Delhi to distribute Krishna consciousness. Plus, you've got all the books, you've got everything you need. So, and very advanced devotees here. So just keep organizing yourselves the way you're doing, and Krishna will bless you all. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Maharaj, for coming, and please. Like whenever you come to Vrindavan or India, please come and stay with us. And
thank you. I'm very touched that you had me over. It was something I've been looking forward to for a while, and I won't forget it, especially the lunch.
Thank you so much for
Thank you very much. It was just absolutely lovely.
It's very encouraging and inspiring for us.
And maybe we'll see you in California.
Yes, lunch.
Yeah. Come by sometime when you have a chance. And, my calendar's there, so if you see him in town, it'd be great to see you and your husband.
Calendar's online, like on the...
Yeah, it's on my website, fanspark.com. And great bhajaniri. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Panchakalpa Rusha Kripa Samadeva Chapta Titanam Pavanavyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaha. That's a special prayer to all the Vaishnavas, offering obeisances. And one little treat I have here is this is Prabhupada's lota that he brought with him when he left Vrindavan and come to America. He used this on the Jaladuta in 1965, but obviously had it way before then. And a close godbrother of mine loaned it to me for 1 year. So I'm taking it everywhere I go. So if you'd like, I'll touch this to your head.
Yeah.
Special prayer that you can catch your own Jaladuta. Hare Krishna.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman. Hey, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.